Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper.
Joining me today on Wells Tech are Dr. Rachel Reno and Jason Schmidt. I'm Sally Draper. We're talking ministry, technology, and education today. Welcome, you guys.
Thanks for having us, Sally.
Yeah.
It's always wonderful to have the opportunity to interact with two of my favorite people in the world. So good to have this chance. And now Martin's not here to spoil all the fun. So that's even better.
And we wouldn't be having this show without you guys. It's wonderful to have you both. Martin's playing hooky today, and we're just going to rule the world, apparently, without him. And so far, we've solved a huge technology challenge because we needed to be able to record this meeting, and it wasn't working, and now it is. So yay for that.
Way to problem solve, Sally. We got it.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. 21st century skills. Or when did we start calling them just skills?
Oh,
I'm just curious about that. Podcast Ponder. Topic for next year.
There you go.
Oh man, we're going to need more podcasts next year at this rate.
I think so. Might be a weekly feature.
Oh dear. Oh, dear. I don't think Martin and Sally can handle that.
No, I don't think anybody could.
Well, speaking of next year, that means we're wrapping up this year. Congratulations to both of you for surviving another year of school. How many years have y'all been teaching? Teaching
define,
and assisting.
I was going to say define teaching. So
in the education space,
So this is year 20 of
congrats.
Like finishing up year 20 of working in education for me.
Awesome.
So then I must be on like 18 or 17, something like
Yeah, somewhere around there. Less.
Yes, less. You are more experienced than I.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Can you tell that these two went to college together?
And
say
high
you
school.
Went to college together without saying it. Well, good for you for wrapping up another year. I know it's always a hectic time, and we super appreciate your willingness to jump in and record with us on a regular basis. This season, our focus has been on SAMR, which besides being a lovely word to say, is a very popular acronym in education technology space. So maybe a good place to start would be kind of a review of SAMR and why people should care about what SAMR is.
Go ahead, sure. Dr. Reno, that's all you.
I got it. You know, this was the first tech integration model I was ever introduced to with the fun video with the Play-Doh. This model looks at, you know, different ways we can use technology in the classroom, starting with substitution and augmentation, which are ways that technology can kind of just make things better. And then we go to modification and redefinition, which is where technology transforms our teaching and learning and does things that we couldn't otherwise do if we didn't have technology.
And I think one of the key points for people that are just tuning in or haven't have listened to the other ones is like, This is not to say that redefinition is better than substitution or any of those kinds of things. It just gives us a framework for how do we talk about the technology and how is it adding to or subtracting from instruction. So, we might visit redefinition, but we're definitely not going to live there because that's a lot of work.
Uh-huh. Very good. Great recap of our season. We've looked at it at all different grade levels. And now we are concluding our discussion on SAMR, or probably not. We'll probably keep talking about it, but we're concluding this season's discussion of SAMR by looking at it and how it affects leadership and policy and that kind of thing. And so really just want to see how it applies and how it assists as you're working through those kind of decisions in a leadership role.
Yeah. So I think, you know, and this is kind of one of those areas that is like, really, I'm really passionate about this part of it, like on the leadership side of things, just because, like, you know, if you think of ed tech as the, or as education really as the ship, policies are the rudder. Like that's how we steer where we go and all of the different things that we have to do, and really helps to simplify the millions of decisions that we have to make over the course of a school year. So, you know, it's really important when you're thinking about whether it's SAMR or an instructional framework or an evaluation model, or like how do we structure our school day, like all of those kinds of things. If you have real clear policy and guidance in place, that's going to augment any of your daily efforts. And then just take some of that decision making cognitive load off of your shoulders. So, you know, you really you lean on those things to help make some of those decisions for you, and then you can focus on what's in front of you and how do I respond to those with clear policies and structures in place.
Awesome. I guess, you know, both of y'all are not in a traditional well school setting, neither of you are, but we're obviously wanting to think, you know, well schools, K through eight, that kind of scenario as we're talking about this. And I guess one of my questions is, how granular do you need to be with the policies, knowing, you know, that they're going to be referenced and interpreted potentially?
Oh, we lost Rachel's audio. She's trying to talk to us, like her mouth is moving, but there's no sound coming out.
That's problematic.
Okay, there you are.
Oh, now okay. We can hear you.
Sorry about that. I'm an odd duck in that I really like reading policies and things on accreditation. And with the number of accreditation visits I've done, it's easy to see that policy is kind of all over the place in our Wells schools. Some schools work best with very granular, very defined policies, and some like to be a little bit looser. I always enjoy finding the policies where you can see exactly what a student has done wrong and what policy was written in response to that. But, you know, policies need to be clear. But they need to, we shouldn't be like strapped down by our policies. They have to have some room for interpretation, some room for understanding different scenarios and different things that happen. And they really do need to be what informs what we do, not necessarily like to the letter of explaining exactly what we do, especially in the area of technology, because technology is always changing. I've read some acceptable use policies that are funny because they talk about technologies that are, you know, 5-10 years old. Ancient. And to me, when you read a policy like that, you're like, oh, well, if you're still talking about zip drives and other such outdated things, where else is your technology outdated? Or where else are your policies outdated? So that's important to make sure that your policies are general enough so that they can cover changes and not be outdated the day after you publish it.
Yeah. And I think too, like it's a little bit different in our Wells schools, but like for my circumstances, like policy is the next, like it comes like legal requirements, policy. And if I have a policy, I have to follow it, and I have to follow it to the letter. So intentionally, for a lot of other organizations, policies will be written in a little broader way so that there's at least a little bit of room for interpretation, because as soon as I put into policy that, like, we only store things on zip drives and, you know, it has to be like we have our backups are done on tape drives and it has to go to such and such a location and we're doing that every 30 days, like all of those kinds of things. Like, I have to do that. And if I don't, then like we're exposing ourselves to some risk, like unnecessarily. And I think it's like, it's different in our wealth schools in that like, there's not the law that backs it up, but the intent of policies and having those kinds of things in place is so that people know what to expect. So especially when it comes to something like the SAMR model, right? What an example of a bad policy would be, our goal is to redefine education, and with every single lesson that teachers are implementing, it needs to reach that redefinition level. Like, people are gonna be exhausted. There's no, and it's just not possible or practical really. To fit that level. So, you know, when we talk about like a policy that would like incorporate SAMR, it could be, instead of like, we're reaching for this level, this in policy is the framework that we are using to describe our instructional practice when it comes to education technology. And now everybody understands, like, when we're talking about technology integration, we are talking about it in terms of the SAMR model. And now, like, and I think even a better policy would just be, we will have an established instructional model that to establish a common groundwork and common framework for everybody to talk about these different things, right? So, like, rather than being that specific, just saying, here's a thing, we're going to do it, but then leave that other part of it up to interpretation. And then that's going to provide a lot more guidance and support for getting the work done, rather than, you know, putting obstacles in the way that might cause problems.
Very, very well said, both of you. Lots of great advice there. So I'm a K-8 school, and I want to know, what policies do I need? I'm guessing AI is at the top of the list. I've got to have an AI policy, right?
I wouldn't recommend it, honestly. I would instead, some of the best AI policies that I've seen are written as parts of the areas that they need to address. So for example, we're concerned about acceptable use. So we want kids to use technology ethically and in accordance with the law, and, you know, not spreading lies or misinformation or any of that kind of stuff. So let's put into our acceptable use policy a clause or a phrase or something that specifically calls out behavior around generative AI and how are those things going to be used. Or academic integrity is a huge thing, right? So, you know, we will specifically call out in our academic integrity policy, this is the way that things look. Here are the things that we expect. And then if you deviate from that, these are the consequences. And that incorporates AI into that conversation. That's my personal opinion, but I know it's been done other ways as well.
Okay. So all the different things you need to cover need to be wrapped into those more traditional policies that everybody hopefully has in place already, but just adding in the components of AI where appropriate.
Well, and I would also add to that, like, if that's depending on your local situation, right? Like, mm-hmm. if there's a lot of concern about something like that, like, we had a similar thing here in Oshkosh. There were a lot of people who were like, hey, you know, like, I know we've got this AI policy, but like, we want more, like, we want more guidance. There's not enough there. And we're like, well, okay, like, you know, we can kind of look at things a little bit differently and kind of, you know, so like, it doesn't hurt to call out AI separately and to have that, but it's going to be more effective if you can like refer into like all of those other different policies. So like, our AI policy reads something to the effect of, we recognize the value and the benefit of it. And, you know, kids need to use it ethically and responsibly, and they can't do the illegal stuff with it. And then refer to policy, blah, 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 blah. And there's like 8 different policies where we added AI language in there too. So really, like, the document should stand on its own, but also be like internal, internally valid. That's the phrase that I was looking for.
Okay. All right. So again, AI is kind of the monster in the room right now, especially in terms of education. And so just kind of delving a little bit deeper or a little bit different path, talking about a presidential executive order that was signed recently that had to do with artificial intelligence. And I just wondered if you guys had any specific thoughts or ideas around that.
So this is, this is a topic. I feel like I'm dominating, kind of like saying,
go,
saying
Jason.
A lot, so I know, I'll just keep on rolling. That's fine. So this has been a pretty healthy topic of conversation, over here in Oshkosh and in my circles, just in public education. But essentially the executive order basically establishes a task force for the nationwide adoption plan for the use and incorporation of AI in K through 12 education. So, you know, anytime the federal government does something, they say it's going to be 6 months, it's going to take 5 years. So like, it'll be a while, I think, before we see a lot of the results of something like this. But just to kind of help maybe give people a little bit of a primer and an opportunity to try this out. I actually, and Sally, this is going to end up in the show notes, right?
Link yes, to this. Definitely.
So for those of you that are watching the video, I went into Gemini has a feature, it's called Deep Research, and it will crawl the web for like a tons of resources and information if you give it, if you prompt it, and a look for what that is. So you'll be able to, that link that we have in the show notes, a link to the entire chat that I had with Gemini around this. So it's got a copy of the prompt, tells you what the research plan is. I told it, so that sounds good. And then it generates a big document that goes after that. So, you know, you have an executive summary and kind of all of the different things that go along with it. And then if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, so it ends up being about if you turn it into a Google Doc, ends up being about it's about a 30-page document by the time everything is all done. So it also, I'll just keep on going, see, it goes forever. If you generate a deep research in like on your own, you can also create an audio overview. So like that was like the killer feature for Notebook LM, was you can have this podcast kind of conversation mm-hmm. between two fictional people. They've built that feature into Google Deep Research as well. So not only can I generate this big report and it'll give me all of the references that it used and sites that it browsed, all that kind of stuff, but I can also get that audio overview and listen through and get like a 10 or a 15 minute podcast on what happened and what was contained in there to get my information in maybe a more easily digestible manner, so that I can kind of get what I need and then take things from there.
And maybe just a preview of the prompt that you used. It says presidential executive order around the adoption and use of AI in K-12 schools, apply it to Wells schools and how it might impact the work they do. So this isn't just a deep research related to the executive order, but it's applied to Wells schools. And I think it did a pretty decent job of applying it to Wells schools. It's pretty impressive, the results you got. So
what really impressed me was towards the bottom of that document with table 3, where it has a strategic action framework, where it calls out MLC to, you know, be involved in developing a synod framework or making sure that our educators are educated in AI so that they can then do this in their classroom. And that's, you know, one of the places where MLC has kind of been looking is, we need to have this in our classes so that when our teachers go out into the classroom, our pastors and staff ministers go out into their ministry, they have a handle on AI, at least where it is when they're in school, so that they can also be integrating that into their ministries.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, I'm going to shift gears one more time, and we're going to talk about something called AIAS, the AI Assessment Skill. Done by Leon Furs, and I will share my screen because I guess it's been updated and now it's these circles, if I'm not mistaken. That's the new AI assessment scale, and they have these different meanings to them. No AI, AI planning, AI collaboration, full AI, and AI exploration. So something new regarding AI, is this a framework? It says it's an assessment scale.
Yeah, so I came across this as part of my work with Rachel and a couple other professors at MLC to kind of figure out how are we going to address the use of AI by students and within an academic setting. So this really, like, if you take this and kind of apply the SAMR model to this, like, if we're really thinking about, like, this is almost kind of like we can incorporate that SAMR model into this scale. Really what this does is, again, we have a common framework and a common understanding about how things are used. And really this is like the biggest way that this could be used is as an instructor or as somebody who's like leading students into these things. It allows me to be really clear about what my expectations are. So like for me, I'm pretty permissive, like for the way that students get after, like, I don't really care how you get there. I just want you to get there, right? So, you know, it's like if you want to make a video and you want to do that, you want to record a podcast, you want to write a paper, like I'm fine, like whatever, however you want to show your learning, but I just want you to learn, and I write my objectives in such a way so that you can do that in multiple ways. This AI assessment scale is another layer on top of that. So not only are we dictating like the media or being descriptive of the media that is used, we're talking about like what is the level of AI's what is AI's role in helping you to meet this objective. So like if I'm thinking of something like, you know, I don't want you to use AI at all. You know, I have like, I can be upfront about that. And then students know like, okay, this is the line. I shall not go any farther. And if I do go farther, I know I'm doing something like that's a little prick at the conscience, or that's a little, you know, like there's room for repercussions, for doing that, because like, I'm like the expectations are clear up front. So like, and that's, I think where a lot of things are missing at this point is like, you know, some teachers will say like, well, if you use AI, like that's academic integrity and you cheated and all of this other kind of stuff. But like, I don't know, like I have an AI spell checker. Do I have to tell you that I can't, like, is that a problem? So, you know, so like it exists in all kinds of different forms. And I think we're, the tendency is to just use some of these blanket terms, but now like this allows instructors to give them that language to be upfront about what their expectations are, and then gives them that opportunity to then within that framework, this is how we're going to change the way that we do things. And then coming back to the SAMR model, you know, help us meet some of those different kinds of learning activities that we're really trying to go for.
That's awesome. What a great find. Very timely and good guidance, I think. And perhaps not specifically policy. You wouldn't make a policy that you need X number of activities with no AI or whatever, but guidance and support.
Right. Yeah. So if I was building that into policy, I wouldn't say you have to have X number of assignments at this level, X number of assignments at this level. But what I would say is when you are giving students instructions, use the AI assessment scale to describe your expectations and then follow through accordingly. And then you have something, or maybe it gets built into your academic integrity policy. Like you just put it on students, like this is the level, like you need to be transparent about what you do. Here's how you describe the different levels that must be included. Otherwise I will assume not. And if I just determine otherwise, then that's a problem.
Okay. Very good. Very good guidance. All right, guys. What have we missed in this discussion of SAMR, a season of SAMR, a focus on leadership? Is there anything else we need to throw in at this point? We've covered it all.
There's nothing left to say, Sally.
Awesome. Well, that's the way to do it. Way to wrap up a season. Awesome. So time to move on from the discussion topic into our ministry resource segment. And actually, I tipped my hat a little bit as I was scrolling through the AI assessment scale. I paused for a moment because there's a pretty cool graphic that shows that progression and the color scheme and everything that they've chosen for this assessment scale. And right above that, there's a link in this article that says sign up for the mailing list to get a free ebook on the AI assessment scale with over 50 activities for the 5 levels. And so if you were to click that link, and we will have this link in the show notes as well, you can get to this page and sign up for that free ebook. All of us have done that and have a preview of what you're going to get when you sign up. And we think it's worth the sign up, that it's a great resource, and wanted to feature it here. You guys have any feedback about it so far? Nothing yet. Just that we've perused it. And maybe I'll tease next season a little bit. You may hear some more from it in the coming school year. So maybe a good professional development thing to tackle this summer, just to spend a little time looking through it or whatever. It certainly would benefit. We think it's worth your time. All right. Then we're going to move on to our tips and picks of the week. One of my favorite segments on the show, and I'll prove it today by saying this is one time when I don't have one selected. So I'm going to rely on our two guest hosts to share their tips and picks of the week. So, Rachel, maybe you want to go first.
Sure. So mine is actually some headphones, which I would have been wearing, except that I left them at work and I'm at home. So that doesn't work very well. But they are Bone Conduction Open Ear Headphones. The brand I have is Shocks, but I've seen a couple other brands too. And I have kind of weird ears. They don't like earbuds. They're not a huge fan of being squashed by like over the ear earphones. And these are kind of the first ones I found that's like, yeah, I could wear these for a long period of time. So the way they work is they kind of go over your ear and then have a little speaker type thing that sits just in front of your ear. It doesn't go in your ear or over your ear, so it kind of leaves your ear alone, which I like. The sound quality is really pretty good. If you really like listening to, like, you want really good music, and you have high standards for that, maybe not quite what you're looking for. But if you like to hear the things that are going around you, in the office, I like to have them so that whatever, you know, YouTube video or whatever I'm listening to doesn't bug the guys, but also I can hear if they're talking about me. or if, guys, you know, if they've got an interesting conversation I want to be a part of, you know, it doesn't make you feel isolated. You're still part of the group, which I understand is important if you're going to wear headphones running. You want to, like, hear if a bear is attacking you. I wouldn't know. I've never taken them out running. But perhaps that's true. Maybe Jason can tell us if that's a thing.
I thought you were going to say, I wouldn't know. I haven't ever encountered a bear. But
well, I haven't encountered a bear either.
Thank goodness.
I feel like encountering a bear might be more likely than me going running somewhere. They're reasonably priced, they're nice and light to wear, and I really enjoy them, so I thought I'd share.
That's awesome. Thank you. I have those same kind of ears, and earbuds are not my friend. I've tried all the sizes, I've done all the things, not happening for me. So, all right, Jason, you're up. I have your website up. It's snorkeling today, apparently.
Yeah, snorkel. So I personally don't have any problems with my AirPods. So like
Apparently
they say,
not.
my ear's fine. So I'm just saying. So instead, I'm going to have a useful pick and talk about Rachel
Slap.
muted herself. Yeah, I know, zing. We have to have a little bit of banter. So Snorkel is another one of those AI tools. And this one is all about prompting students to reflect on their thinking. So one of those transformative uses of AI, especially when it comes to like our younger students, or for students in general, is the ability to identify some of the things that they need and then point out specific things with low effort on the side of the teacher. So what Snorkel does is you set up a student, we set a student up with like a problem on a whiteboard or something like that. And it's basically the same kind of thing that you would do if you had them up in front of the classroom and talking through a problem. So you get them to think about what it is that they're doing to solve that problem or work on through it. And then in the back end, Snorkel will take whatever it is that they're doing. It analyzes the things that they say, and then it gives them feedback based on specific things that they have going on. So it will tell them, like if they're talking through a problem and they say, I have 2 + 2 = 4, I want to take two groups of two, and then if I combine them, that gives me this, that gives me the answer of 4. And then like the feedback would say, that's really interesting. Like I can see you understand blah 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 and how addition works. What would happen if you did it this way? And like so like really does a little bit more of that kind of prompting. And then also as a teacher, instead of me listening to 18 kids say the same thing, I can have it happen once, and then they're all doing it on this tool. I get some insights on the back end where I can just say like, oh, okay, like Billy and Susie are maybe struggling a little bit with this particular concept. I get some of those analytics. I can pull them in, help them understand that concept, and then work things other ways. So Snorkel is the tool. It's snorkel.app, not snorkel.com, as you might think. That's something different. It's not bad. It's just not the right thing. So snorkel.app is my pick. It is currently free. There is a school level plan. I don't think it's really very costly, but I think this is like they're just getting started. So this is one of those tools, I think, that like as it gains traction, it will become one of those tools that I know they're committed to having a free version always. And I don't think it'll lose functionality, but I don't think you'll get those additional insights and things like that. So that is my pick this week, Snorkel.
That's pretty cool. And with the dot app, then it's running on their device.
It's a website. Yeah, it's a
It's a
web-based.
website.
I
Awesome.
just like because snorkel.com was taken, so they did dot app. Because
There
it's
you
an app,
go.
but not like an app in the traditional sense.
Okay. Very good. Well,
So,
thanks, guys.
Jason, where would you put that on the same or model?
It depends on how you use it, right? So, if I'm thinking about like a if I just like that exercise that I just described, that would probably be an augmentation use. So it's allowing me to do something that I would have been doing before, just more efficiently. So that's like that activity that I described, I would put it there. But you could definitely get into the redefinition side of that, like using an app like Snorkel, if let's say if you're leveraging some of those more robust feedback options that are like not generally available like right off the bat, that's part of the subscription. But if you can leverage some of those pieces, I could see it getting more towards the right redefinition there, where we're getting into something that was not possible before.
So if I can
Right.
play devil's advocate, if Snorkel can do this, what do we need teachers for?
Teachers aren't doing it anyways. So I, because you know, one of the we have that ever running four-letter word called time, right? That a lot of people say, so I would do this, but I don't have enough time. There's not enough time to do those things. Guess what? We're manufacturing time. So now like we can take that same amount of time and give kids the kinds of feedback that they need without expending a bunch of additional effort. So it just makes us more effective rather than trying to, you know, work with two or three kids at a time, I can focus on like what specific interventions do my kids need to be able to help serve their needs better or build relationships, you know, serve, you know, Christian role modeling, like all those other pieces that go along that the computer cannot do. So I'm a big fan of the phrase, like if a computer can do it, it probably should. So let's focus on what the computer does well, and then I'll focus on what the people do well.
Great answer. Great question. Yay. Thanks for being here, guys, because you got it going on. All right. We are going to wrap up today's show. Let Jason and Rachel get back to their end of school year activities. We are going to talk again in a few weeks, and we're planning to have an interview with Pastor Nate Siles. Pastor Siles is administrator with Multilanguage Productions, which is doing some amazing things in all different languages around the world. And he's dabbling in AI music, which is pretty impressive. That's what I've been listening to on my headphones, which don't go in the ear. So good stuff. Looking forward to talking with Pastor Siles and to talking with you guys again next season. Enjoy your summer. Come back full of lots of great professional development ideas that we can share on Wells Tech again in the fall. We will welcome Martin back next time. So be sure to tune in. And until then, blessings, and we'll see you soon.